Welcome to a very special presentation of the novel A Really Good Day by James Hosek. On its surface, it's a story about a remarkable round of golf. But if you're not a golfer, if you quickly change the channel, if you accidentally come upon a tournament on TV, I encourage you to listen anyway. It's a story about family and friendship. It's a story about redemption and second chances. It's a story about promises made and promises kept. It's a story about once-in-a-lifetime experiences. But most of all, it is one man's love letter to his family. That man was my brother, the author, James Hosek. Aside from being an amazing veterinarian, woodworker, gardener, husband, father, brother, son, and friend, he was a writer. Writers are often told to write what they know. And in this, his first book, he did that in more ways than I can count. It will make you laugh. It will make you cry. And it will make you stand up and cheer. So sit back and enjoy as Jim takes you on a fun, entertaining journey through 18 holes of golf and one man's really good day. Chapter 24, The Miracle. From where she sat, Sarah could see the ball was going to be short. She had so wanted him to make it. She felt Gina's hand on her shoulder, a comforting touch. "What's that?" someone shouted from the tee. Scott tried to focus his eyes on the dark water that the ball was heading for. There was a darker area, rippling, like the ball had already fallen there. Ellie, whose camera was still following the ball, captured perhaps the best shot of what happened next. The events of the next couple of seconds would be replayed over and over for days to come. The possibility had occurred to no one, and if anyone had suggested it, they never came forward. Shortly after Scott and Paul saw the ball hit the water, they heard the slower traveling sound waves of the ball hitting something hard, similar to when an errant shot hit a cart path. The ball rose off the surface of the water with nearly the same speed it had landed. "Oh my God," Scott muttered. "Holy Moses," added Paul. Andrew Patterson's remark would be impolite to record. Ellie zoomed in on the dark object sticking out of the water. It was a turtle shell. And next to it, the turtle's head broke the surface for a moment. Then he sank back down into the shallow water of the pond. She remained focused on the spot, wondering if it would make a return appearance. Then she remembered what happened at the 17th tee. It couldn't be, she tried to convince herself. But once again, impossible was becoming a useless word on this day of miracles. "That," grunted Harold Frisk to the slack-jawed man sitting next to him, "was the turtle you almost killed." Carl Bateman snapped out of his disbelief for a moment. "It can't be." "It can if I say it is." Karen Blakely's smile, the one that had broadened as she saw the ball heading into the water hazard, faded into incredulity as she watched it bounce high into the air off the surface of the water and land on the edge of the green to stop 3 yards from the pin. "Jesus Christ." "Probably not too far off the mark," commented Tim Carousel. April shook her head. From where they stood, they couldn't see what had caused the ball to skip out of the water, but seeing it wouldn't have helped make believing it any easier. "Looks like it's over for your boy," Tim Carousel stated. "I think I'll try to track down that Jake Fisher fellow, see if we can work out some sort of deal here." He walked away from the two women, neither one of them seeming to have the ability to follow him. "What was that?" April asked. "It was a turtle," said a helpful golf fan watching the replay on his smartphone.
A what? Karen asked.
The short man with thick glasses, blue windbreaker, and a Cubs baseball cap held the tiny screen where Karen could see it. She stared at the image for a moment before feeling the eyes of the nerdy fan staring down her blouse. She shrugged her jacket over her chest and turned away from the man with disgust.
Get a life, she muttered.
From where he stood, some 340 yards away, Scott couldn't see how close he was to the pin. It didn't really matter. He had done it. Had it been the turtle telling him to go for it, prompting Scott telepathically that he had his back, so to speak? His hands went to his head as he dropped his driver and took a step back. Thank you, thank you, thank you, he said. Perhaps to God, but maybe to the turtle as well. Someone was looking out for him today. Paul was standing next to him, his left hand grasping his buddy's shoulder firmly. That, my friend, was pretty cool. Hard shot to make. Do you think you hurt his shell?
I don't know, Scott answered. I hope not.
If it was the same one I put in the water back on 17, he's a good-sized turtle. Pretty thick shell.
Probably set his guts ringing like a bell, Paul pointed out.
Ding dong, agreed Scott. Andrew Patterson squinted at the green. Is he on? Is he on? He kept asking with disbelief.
It's on, answered a voice from behind him. That's impossible, Andrew said. That can't be. It was going in the water. I saw it going in the water. That's not fair. It's not fair.
The guy's got luck coming out of his ears, said the same voice.
That's all it is, agreed Andrew, without looking at the source of the voice. Just pure and simple dumb luck. A one in a billion shot. It should have gone in the water.
You never had a chance against this guy, said the voice.
I played the best I could, Andrew said.
He turned to look at the source of the voice. It was the large, red-jacketed official that had been following them along the back nine.
What could I do?
Absolutely nothing.
Andrew looked toward the tee at Scott and Paul. A couple dozen people were crowding the golfer, holding out bits of paper for an autograph, others having him sign their scorecards that they had been keeping as they followed the two golfers. Andrew pulled out his scorecard. He looked at how he had come so close. He was leading at one point. He had the tournament in his hand. But that lucky son of a gun had taken it. It truly was his day. Andrew worked his way through the crowd of people, holding his scorecard in front of him. Scott was signing whatever was thrust in front of him, basking in the sudden but doomed to be short-lived celebrity status that was thrust upon him. As he took Andrew's card from his outstretched hand, the crowd silenced as they recognized Patterson. Scott signed his name, and as he handed it back, realized it was Andrew Patterson's card he had just autographed. Andrew Patterson looked different. He didn't look defeated or disappointed or frustrated. He looked happy.
Congratulations, Mr. Hanover, he said sincerely.
Scott pocketed his pen and shook the outstretched hand. It's Scott.
Congratulations, Scott. It was truly an amazing shot.
And congratulations on the birth of your child. A girl?
A girl, yes, Scott answered, still holding Andrew's hand.
Game's not over, Andrew. I believe you're up.
I'm not going to try that, he said.
I didn't think you would. I'll see you on the green.
Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Andrew turned and walked back to where his golf bag was. The officials were doing their best to keep autograph seekers away now. He sighed as he reached for his bag and pulled out his three-wood. The tournament was over in terms of who would finish first and who would finish second.
but how he would come out was still to be determined. He could easily play the bitter perfectionist who felt he was cheated out of his victory, or he could be the consummate sportsman. He realized that for Scott Hanover, this was a day that would come only once. Andrew had many victories in his future. He still had a better score than he had planned on. No one else was close to third place. He was sure that even Joe Calkin would have had a tough time keeping up with him today. He wondered if playing against Hanover had an unintended effect on his game. Maybe Scott had pushed him to be a little better than usual. Perhaps he had shown Andrew that there was still a little more he could put into his game. As the fans departed, satisfied with a scrawled name on a piece of paper or directed to back off the tee by the officials, four women sitting on the trailer to the side came into his view. He only saw Sarah's smile. Little Sally was sleeping now, satisfied with her first meal, and obviously tired from the ordeal of being born. "You do that all the time out here?" Sarah asked. "First time, actually." "Why did you even try? Even Gina thought you were insane to do it." "I just had a feeling." "Do you want to hold her?" Sarah asked. "She's sleeping," Scott pointed out. "If this crowd won't wake her, nothing will," she argued. Sally and Gina helped Sarah up, and she passed the bundled baby to Scott. He held Sally Gina and couldn't help the tears that welled in his eyes. He was holding his daughter.
"Please clear the tee," the large, red-jacketed man announced. "Mr. Patterson is up."
The crowd quickly left, realizing the quicker Andrew got on, the sooner they get to see what was going to happen next. Jason Bernard sank back into his chair as he watched Scott take his daughter in his arms and the loving smile on his own wife's face. He had recounted the miracle drive 5 times for the viewing public, and now Patterson was getting ready to make his hit. It had been a miracle. It had been obvious from almost the moment the ball left the tee that it was destined for the water, and Jason had felt the adrenaline rush that had been supporting him drain for an instant, only to be replaced by amazement as the ball bounced off what he first thought was a rock in the water. When Ellie zoomed in on the turtle, he just kept repeating, "It's a miracle! It's a miracle!" How else would one describe it? Freddie had gone bonkers at the prospect that Scott Hanover was one stroke away from being alone with the lowest score in golf. A 58. 14 strokes under par. And he did it, having 1 bogey and 2, possibly 3, eagles. Fred was trying to find out if anyone had even 2 eagles in a round before, let alone 3. Then there had been the scene of Scott and Andrew shaking hands, exchanging words, like they were the best of buddies. What was that all about? It would have to wait until a post-game interview. He hoped he'd be able to talk to Scott before he had to take his wife and daughter to the hospital. The police had reported that the ambulance had almost made it to Central Avenue and would be in the parking lot in a matter of minutes. Despite the immensity of the moment, Jason had found the words to express the situation to millions of television viewers. It was certainly different than reporting and editing things down back at the studio. He liked doing this. He liked it a lot. If only it wasn't golf, he kept telling himself with a smile. But still, today had been anything but boring. With only 2 golfers being followed, the pace was a little slow as they trailed from shot to shot, but he and Lucy had managed to fill up the downtime with interesting bits. Ellie's camera was on Andrew Patterson getting ready for his tee shot, a man doomed to second place by circumstances outside his control, and seemingly accepting of the situation. Andrew couldn't help thinking of Hanover's tee shot. He was so sure that it was in the water. It was in the water. Part of him was relieved the pressure was off. He could finish the tournament, and when Hanover, as he hoped, turned down the invitation to the Pro-Am, he would accept graciously. He thought it ironic that Hanover had entered the tournament because of Joe Calkin's injury, and now Andrew would be tempting a pro career due to another man's promise to his wife. Cecily, he thought. Where was Cecily? Did she even know what was going on? Probably not. She was likely getting ready for their evening out to celebrate. She had never attended any of his golf tournaments, and he didn't expect her to. She would be extremely bored. Undoubtedly, she'd be disappointed that Andrew lost, but excited he'd get to play in the Pro-Am. She was predictable that way. He looked at his ball, drew back his club, and imparted a mild counterclockwise spin to the ball. It soared around the edge of the pond, landing on the fairway about halfway to the hole. The applause was there, but tempered. Compared to Scott Hanover, his superb drive was like a duffed shot. Andrew went back to his clubs and was surprised to see Jake Fisher standing there with the bag slung over his shoulder.
That was a nice thing to do.
What, not showing up your client?
Andrew asked.
I do believe you told a joke, Mr. Patterson, Jake said, laughing.
Well, I won't make a habit of it, Andrew promised.
Looks like you could use a hand, Jake said, stating the obvious.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. I certainly could.
He handed his driver to his new caddy, who found its slot in the bag. Jake walked up next to Andrew Patterson, and the two started trekking down the fairway. Andrew thought how strange it was to have a caddy walk next to him. It was turning out to be an unusual day all around. Paul pointed out the sight of Andrew and Jake jabbering as the two men walked down the fairway.
Is that legal to change caddies? Paul asked.
Doesn't bother me, Scott answered.
But he's your agent, Paul pointed out.
I don't need an agent.
Well, apparently neither does Andrew Patterson. So why is Fisher doing it?
Because Andrew needed a caddy, and it's a nice thing to do.
I suppose, Paul agreed.
He picked up Scott's bag.
You gonna carry her all the way to the green?
He asked, nodding at the sleeping infant.
If Sarah lets me, he answered.
He looked over at his wife. She had collapsed into near sleep. Gina and Sally offered her a drink, produced by one of the officials. He walked over to her.
Mind if Sally Gina walks with me to the green? He asked.
I think she'd enjoy that, Sarah said with a smile. By the time Andrew and Jake had reached Patterson's ball on the fairway, they had both discovered some things in common that neither would have thought. They both loved crosswords, Stephen King novels, and Meg Ryan movies.
Listen, Jake, Andrew said as they stood staring toward the green. I can get out of my contract with Blakely. You can be my agent.
No, don't. Karen is very good at what she does. She'll do right by you.
What will you do if Hanover ducks the limelight like you think you will?
Something will come along. That's how it's always been with me. Something always seems to come along.
5 wood, Andrew instructed. He suddenly realized that the well-trained Eric Peters had actually become an integral part of his golfing. He pondered giving the boy another chance. Maybe, he thought. He lined up his shot, swung at the ball, and sent it onto the green, a yard or two behind Scott Hanover's. Finish up with a par, he thought. Not bad.
Get out there, April Weinstein urged.
What? Asked Karen.
Fisher's carrying Patterson's bag. You go out there and do that. He's your client.
Karen stared at her boss in disbelief.
Do you know what I've been through today? That wild goose chase you sent me on at the marathon landed me 3 tickets. I had to walk 2 miles in those shoes. I've ruined the suit, the blouse, and the pantyhose. I had to use a payphone, for God's sake. I am not going to carry golf clubs. You can do it if you want, but I'm staying here.
April made an exasperated noise, gave up the argument,
and stomped off towards the clubhouse. There was no reason for her to be there anymore. Scott and Steve caught up to Jake and Andrew halfway to the green from his second shot. The girls on the trailer had been ushered through and waited on the cart path behind the 18th green. Andrew stopped to admire Hanover's daughter. "I suppose she'll look a little more human in a couple of days," he said, consoling him. "I told you," Paul said with righteous indignation. "Another joke, Andrew?" commented Jake. "You might just be human after all." Andrew chuckled at the comment.
"Touché," he agreed.
"This is Sally Gina Hanover, Andrew," Scott said, introducing the baby.
"Pleased to meet you, young lady. You sure picked a good time to make your appearance. You'll get to see your daddy kick my butt, and on your birthday to boot."
"You know I wasn't playing against you, Andrew," Scott explained.
"No, but I was playing against you. That's why I lost. And despite the frustration, it has been a great experience. Life-altering, one might say."
They reached the green. "I hate to say it, Andrew, but you're still away."
"Of course," sighed Andrew.
Scott took Sally Gina over to Sarah, and she snuggled in. Scott pulled his Cayman Island penny from his pocket. He marked the ball and pocketed it. Andrew marked his ball, picking it up to check for any damage and to clean it. He replaced it quickly, aware that the crowd was unwilling to broach any delay in the proceedings. He lined up his putt. The green was fairly flat. He just needed to get close to the hole for a par. That was all he wanted. It was all he needed. He tapped the ball, and it rolled up to the hole, broke a little left, and stopped about 6 inches from the cup. He looked at Scott Hanover. He hoped that the man had noticed the break near the hole. Scott's ball was nearly on the same line, and to ignore it would ruin any chance he had of breaking the record. Furthermore, if Andrew were to mention it to Scott, he would give the golfer a 2-stroke penalty for taking advice on the course. He didn't want to do that. The crowd applauded Andrew's effort, and he walked over and tapped his ball in for par. More applause, and Andrew removed his hat and waved to the crowd. He walked to where Jake Fisher was standing with his bag. Jake took the putter and slipped it back into Andrew's handmade cover, sliding it gently into the bag. He was glad his initial assessment of the man was wrong. Or was it that the man had changed? Had a day of miracles not only affected Jake's life, but the life of a man who had known nothing but victories up until now? By accepting his defeat, hadn't he truly won something better? Jake thought so. He truly did.
"Nice shot," Jake said.
Andrew turned and looked at him. For 2 years, he had abhorred any comments from the several boys who had carried his bags. He always thought such comments were redundant, to say the least. Andrew already knew he was a good golfer. To have others express that opinion to him had always irked him before. He turned to Jake and said, "Thank you." Jake clapped him on the shoulder with a big, friendly hand and smiled and nodded. The miracles continued. "One putt to go," Paul said.
"If I make it," Scott answered.
"Do you have any doubts?" Paul asked. "You're here. There is no way that ball is not going in." "You saw that break to the left in Andrew's shot?" Scott asked. "Like he was giving you a free lesson on how to one-putt this hole." "I rather think he was. Awful nice of him." Scott knelt on one knee behind his ball and examined the turf. He couldn't see the break, but he knew it was there. He stood and lined up his shot, aiming an inch to the right of the hole. If he missed, he would miss. One more shot and he could go home, or rather to the hospital with his family. His family. What a concept it was. The crowd's rumble diminished to silence. But Scott wasn't there with them. He was watching his daughter, years in the future, taking his 2-big putter and knocking a golf ball around the backyard. She was smiling and determined to hit it all the way across the yard. He took his customary 3 practice swings to set the speed of the putt. He stepped up to the ball, lining up the lines on the top of the putter to the spot he had picked out to the right of the hole. He drew the club back and closed his eyes. The club swung forward. He heard the tap of the club and held his breath, waiting for the plunk of the ball falling into the hole. He never heard it. The roar of the crowd and the screams of Paul Bauer from several yards behind him deafened his ears to the final confirmation. He opened his eyes, and his ball was nowhere to be seen. He breathed and swallowed and collapsed to his knees. His exhaustion was sudden and unexpected. He buried his face in his hands, and his body shuddered with pure joy. Paul and Jake were suddenly standing next to him. They helped him up. "Are you okay?" Paul asked. "I'm fine," he answered. Scott walked over to the hole and picked up the ball. He tried to hand it to Paul, but he pushed it back. "You keep it," he insisted. "No," Scott answered. "This would not have happened without you. Sell it on eBay if you want. You've earned it." Paul took the ball. "I'll never sell it." "Your loss," Scott joked. The two friends hugged, and Paul held the ball in the air to the delight of the crowd. Scott glanced toward Sarah and Sally Gina in the golf cart. He handed his putter to Paul. "I've got to go, buddy." Paul took the club. "Go. I'll talk to you later."
"Don't let him go,"
Jason screamed into Ellie's headphones. She slipped the headphones down around her neck as her camera pointed at the new family bouncing away in the golf cart. Jason did deserve to interview the man who had just golfed a 58, but Hanover's family had first claim on him today. She turned her camera to Paul, slipped her headphones back on, and clicked her microphone. "Here's a guy with the inside story," she said. "Interview him." Jason was silent for a second, thinking over the possibilities. From his booth, he could see Hanover's golf cart racing through the crowd to the waiting ambulance. Any port in a storm, he realized.
"Give him an earphone and a microphone,"
he ordered. Ellie was quick to reply.
And here, with a point of view rarely seen in these events, is Scott Hanover's caddy, Paul Bauer, Jason said, introducing him. Paul smiled at the camera.
"Just call me Zorro."
Epilogue, 19th hole. Sally and Gina arrived from the kitchen carrying trays of steaming chicken wings, egg rolls, cocktail wieners, and breaded cheese sticks. "Get your heart attacks here," said Sally, smiling as she set her tray on the coffee table. At the table was Sarah, with little Sally Gina, enjoying her evening meal courtesy of her mother in a very nice glider rocker with matching footstool. On the sofa, Scott, Paul, and Jake dug hungrily into the food, earning disgusted looks from the women. Sally and Gina sat on the settee to their right, taking an appropriate portion of the snacks as they settled in to watch the big day on television. A lot had happened in the last 4 weeks, and this afternoon was the culmination of those events.
"Here it comes," Jake announced, as the television coverage of the tournament broke away for some commercial announcements.
Andrew Patterson appeared on the screen, walking slowly across a green on a beautifully manicured golf course, dressed in a slightly toned-down version of his playing attire.
"I'm Andrew Patterson. I have the great distinction of being the guy Scott Hanover beat when he scored his record-breaking round of 58. One thing I learned was never to underestimate your opponent's luck. The other thing is that if you can't be lucky, use Callaway. I wouldn't be on the course with anything less."
He stopped by a ball sitting several yards from the hole. The camera changed perspective to reveal the Callaway logo on the ball, then returned to focus on Andrew. He had his gold-handled jade putter in his hand. With total nonchalance, he backhanded the ball at the hole behind him, and miraculously, the ball rolled right into the cup. I wonder how many takes that took, Paul said.
Shh, Gina warned him.
The scene was replaced with a picture of a box of a dozen Callaway tour balls and five words printed below them, which were echoed by the announcer.
All the way with Callaway.
The ad was replaced by an SUV driving jauntily through a muddy back road.
Too bad you didn't end up with a piece of that, Scott said to Jake.
Ah, that's okay. Karen Blakely did end up working pretty hard to convince Tim Carousel that since you weren't available, Andrew would be the man they wanted. After all, he was who they were after in the first place.
Still, he should have been your client, Gina said. April had no business sending Karen out like that.
Hey, at the time, given my history, it was a wise business move. Besides, I do better with the little guy.
Oh, I think this is it, Sarah said, as the SUV ad faded out, and the dark, mirror-like surface of a pond filled the picture. The camera panned to a figure sitting on a log. As he turned to face the camera, the friends gathered in the living room cheered the appearance of Paul Bauer.
Shh, Paul shushed.
Paul on the TV started. When history is being made, a golfer doesn't need to have a caddy who's unprepared. I'm there with his clubs, his balls, his tees, and a little friendly advice. The camera panned down to the log he was sitting on. Next to Paul sat a very large turtle. And for my assistant, I use only the best. Paul was now holding a short green can. Turtle wax, guaranteed to give you the perfect bounce on the golf course and the longest-lasting shine on your car. The replay of Scott's drive on the 18th hole from the month before played. A caption explained to the few watching who didn't know what the event was, what had happened. While Scott and Paul celebrated, the camera zoomed in on a can of turtle wax tucked into Scott's golf bag, thanks to some sort of digital imaging magic. The scene cut back to Paul sitting by the pond. When you need extra protection for your car, or your turtle. He was now holding up the turtle. The turtle wax logo replaced their picture, and the announcer reiterated the message to run out and buy turtle wax now. Everyone applauded. Paul stood and took his bows. That, said Scott to Jake, was a stroke of genius.
Well, it's nice to know I still have the old instincts.
He's got more than that, Gina said. Are you going to tell them now, or shall I? Jake chuckled.
Gina and I are engaged.
Gina pulled out her left hand. A sparkling diamond ring adorned the third finger. The stone was significant, but tasteful. She stood and walked to Sarah so she could get a look without disturbing the now snoozing Sally Gina. The little girl had been able to sleep through almost everything. Scott attributed it to her first day of life at a golf tournament. The television returned to the coverage of the Callaway Pro-Am tournament. Jason Bernard was summing up the tournament so far. You must be pretty proud of Jason's career taking off, Sarah said to Sally. Sally blushed and smiled. He never liked golf, and now they got him working the pro tournaments. But come next summer, he'll need to find something a little less demanding. Why? Sarah asked. Oh, it's probably too early, but I have to tell somebody. And you're all like family to Jason and me, she began. You're not. We are, exclaimed Sally. I'm due July 4th, if you can believe it. Oh, Sally, cried Sarah. I'm so happy for you, for the both of you. You hang around enough babies, those old instincts to procreate kick in, she explained. Congratulations spilled forth from around the room, accompanied by hugs and kisses.
You'll be next, Paul warned Jake. Someday, Jake agreed. Lots of things I still have to work out.
Well, just stay my agent, Paul urged him.
You got it.
Jake turned to Scott.
How about you? I have half a dozen offers if you're interested.
I really don't have the time or desire, Jake, Scott said. I've got my memories of that day, and to sell them just doesn't seem right.
Paul can sell them all he wants, but I'll keep things the way they are.
Had to ask, Jake apologized.
We thank you for your concern, Sarah said. I'm just glad to have Sally's dad around every weekend.
Scott looked over at the trophy sitting on the mantelpiece.
Hanging above it was the plaque from the USGA, recognizing his record-setting round.
Next to that was a picture of Scott and Sarah and Sally Gina on the golf course, sent to him by an anonymous photographer.
His mind drifted back to that moment.
It truly had been a really good day.
Author's note. Thanks for taking the time to enjoy my golf fantasy, as I've taken to call it. George Dunn National Golf Course is real, and I've played it many times. I did take some liberties with some of the holes to help with the story, but for the most part, the course is as Scott and Andrew played it. As many golfers know, even though a lot of Scott's shots seemed incredible, none of them were impossible. I hope I haven't broken any USGA golf rules or at least interpreted them in the spirit they were intended. I did make up the Niagara and the tournament, along with the USA Sports Network. Any other similarities to actual people or organizations are totally coincidental. Special thanks to Rachel and Dan Mitchell for their early read-through, their suggestions, and encouragement. Much appreciation to Rick Schoenfield for his thorough proofreading and corrections. Thanks to my brother Rich for getting me out on the golf course all those early mornings in college. It's still as fun now as it was then. James Hosek. About the author. Dr. James Hosek, DVM, was born in Chicago, Illinois, and grew up in Stickney, Illinois. He attended Thomas Alva Edison Elementary School and J. Sterling Morton West High School. He received his B.S. and DVM from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He currently has a house call practice on the north side of Chicago and is the owner of Merrick Animal Hospital in Brookfield, Illinois. He is married and has two boys, hopefully future golfers. He also has been adopted by two cats, Sanyania and Hedwig. Apart from writing and golfing, he enjoys gardening, woodworking, and photographing mushrooms. Jim passed away in December of 2023 and left behind a legacy of family, friends, and fiction. Thank you for listening to A Really Good Day, a novel by James Hosek, narrated by Rich Hosek. If you are interested in purchasing a hardcover edition of this story for yourself or a golfer in your life, visit jimbooks.myshopify.com. You'll get free shipping in the United States. You'll also get the complete audiobook and ebook editions with your purchase. And make sure to subscribe to the mailing list for updates about the upcoming release of his Doctor at Mystery series, cozy mysteries about a crime-solving veterinarian. Thanks again, and all the very best.